Chevron Jones?
Well, I think we have to be clear about something, that the Republicans just gave Disney $163 million tax break. But then out of the same breath, you're taking their special district away from them. So you can tell that this is the Republicans being petty at its best, because it's clear that this has been in place for over 50 years. And as a matter of fact, Universal Studios have two special districts. Did they come out after Universal? They did not. They came particularly right after Disney, because the corporation does not agree with what the governor and the Republicans have done. And it's fair to say that right now Disney and Universal Studios is the largest employers of Floridians within the state, employing over 80,000 people. 80,000 people. But here's what we're not talking about.
We have 10 seconds.
This is what I will say, that the tax that is happening will be taxed on the backs of the Floridians, over $2 billion.
Democratic Florida State Senator Chevron Jones, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Florida's first openly gay state senator. That does it for our hour. Democracy Now! Has an immediate opening for a news writer-producer. Check out democracynow.org for details and apply immediately. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
At KBOO, we're always busy bees preparing wonderful programming for you to enjoy. Now, during our spring membership drive, we need some money to go with that honey. Help us raise $56,000 by May 28th to support our efforts to pollinate the media landscape with locally produced, independent, people-powered community radio. Donate right now at kboo.fm/give or tap the donate button in the KBOO mobile app.
April is Jazz Appreciation Month, and KBOO Community Radio is very proud to be the first FM station in the state of Oregon to program jazz. Let's celebrate KBOO's diverse jazz programming and the jocks who volunteer their talent to share their love of jazz music. Jazz Appreciation Month, or JAM as it's affectionately known, represents a sweet spot in the lives of KBOO's music lovers. So join us on Wednesdays, noon to 4, and Saturdays, 2 to 5, throughout the month of April, as we toast America's greatest art form here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a coalition of groups in Oregon are urging the state treasury to divest from fossil fuels. Nonprofit Oregon Recovers holds a rally outside the Oregon Health Authority to draw attention to addiction. And in international news, two senior U.S. officials meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 25th, 2022. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member with us by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Althea Billings. A coalition of nearly 90 organizations across Oregon is pushing the state treasury to divest from fossil fuels. The coalition Divest Oregon launched a new report stating that the Oregon State Treasury has at least $5.3 billion of public money invested in fossil fuel companies. Coalition spokesperson Andrew Bogrand said, quote, "There's the irony of Oregon being a champion in the environmental movement, and having these investments are at a cross purposes with that image or view we have of ourselves." The $5.3 billion Oregon has invested in fossil fuels exceeds the entire federal budget for energy efficiency and renewable energy for 2022. and the $5.3 billion number is likely a significant undercount of the state's fossil fuel investments. That's because, in addition to its public investments, the state treasury has more than $25 billion invested in private equity firms that also invest in projects like fracking or oil pipelines. Those billions of dollars support the operation of corporations like Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Pacific Gas and Electric. According to the report, more than $1 billion is directly invested in the coal industry. Leaders with Divest Oregon are pushing for the state to stop making new investments in fossil fuel companies and phase out its current fossil fuel investments by 2026. And it's not just climate concerns that are fueling the divestment push. As the effects of global warming intensify and governments push to move away from extractive energy sources, some experts say that investments in fossil fuel represent serious financial risks. Divest Oregon's goals are by no means unprecedented. Last summer, Maine passed legislation mandating fossil fuel divestment by 2026, while New York State and New York City have both begun divestment processes as well, as have a number of major colleges and universities across the U.S. According to a new study, low-producing oil and gas wells generate a small amount of U.S. oil and gas production, but constitute half of all methane emissions from the industry. Emily Scott has more.
A new study finds that low-producing oil and gas wells make up about half of potent methane emissions emitted from all well sites in the U.S., while accounting for just 6% of the nation's oil and gas production. Led by the Environmental Defense Fund, the report found an estimated 565,000 low-producing sites making less than 15 barrels of oil per day across the country, with a large number in Pennsylvania and the Appalachia region. Mark O'Mara of the Environmental Defense Fund says the high amount of leaking methane emissions, about 4 million metric tons annually, is a big concern for the climate.
This matters a great deal because methane, which is the main component of natural gas, is such a powerful greenhouse gas whose emissions into the atmosphere packs more than 80 times the global warming effect of carbon dioxide over the first 20 years following emissions.
This weekend, Pennsylvania officially entered the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which puts a price on carbon, as the regulation was published in the state code. It's the first fossil fuel-producing state to join the program. Lois Bauer Bjornson of Clean Air Council says, living in southwestern Pennsylvania, her home is surrounded by low-producing wells. She says a proposed ruling from the EPA that would require oil and gas companies to monitor well sites for methane leaks is needed.
It's important for the EPA to set stronger standards so that states like ours that are energy producing states can look to the EPA to guide us to do the right thing. And if this is a federally mandated law, as it should be, then we have to do what the EPA is telling us to do.
She adds that the study underscores the importance of federal standards that address pollution from these smaller sites. Once federal regulations are finalized, Pennsylvania can develop implementation plans that tackle this problem and can be tailored to realities on the ground. This is Emily Scott reporting.
Members of the nonprofit group Oregon Recovers rallied in front of the Oregon Health Authority in Portland on Saturday to draw attention to alcohol and addiction-related deaths in the state. The group says Oregonians are dying at a staggering rate from preventable addictions and overdoses. The rally was organized by Mike Marshall, executive director of Oregon Recovers. Marshall has criticized the OHA's handling of Measure 110, the ballot measure passed in November of 2020 that decriminalized the possession of personal amounts of drugs. The measure was also supposed to build recovery facilities throughout the state, pay for harm reduction, and point addicts towards treatment. Almost 2 years after Measure 110's passage, just a small amount of the nearly $300 million allocated has been spent while Oregon's addiction crisis continues. Oregon Recovers says the state ranks second nationally in addiction-related deaths and last when it comes to access to treatment. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in March of 2020, alcohol-related deaths have jumped more than 70% and drug overdose fatalities have risen nearly 40% in Oregon. Meanwhile, residential treatment capacity for adults and adolescents has fallen, and the state has shelved a public education campaign against binge drinking. Oregon Recovers also argues that the OHA has failed to help an advisory group that is overseeing the distribution of funds. They say the group has a lot of experience with managing addiction, but little experience allocating taxpayer dollars. Oregon Recovers has developed a 12-step process to address addiction in the state. It includes an oversight office of addiction recovery, coordinating efforts between Oregon agencies to tackle addiction, and providing immediate access to detox facilities, treatment, and housing. It also calls on the state to invest in prevention. Two senior U.S. officials met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev on Sunday for the first time since Russia invaded Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin flew to Ukraine on Sunday for a wartime meeting with Zelensky, promising more military and diplomatic support and defying concerns about whether it was safe to take the trip. The trip represents the highest level American visit since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. It's meant to show steadfast U.S. support for Ukraine and its defense as the war enters a new phase expected to be marked by a major Russian offensive in Ukraine's south and east. Blinken said he and Austin took the train from southwestern Poland to Kiev and met with Zelensky and other senior Ukrainian officials for 3 hours at the presidential palace. Blinken added that they did not meet with the public or tour parts of the country damaged by the war. Blinken also announced that the Biden administration will finally nominate an ambassador to Ukraine, Bridget Brink, currently the U.S. ambassador to Slovakia, who for weeks has been widely reported to be Joe Biden's likely pick. The U.S. had not had a Senate-confirmed ambassador to Ukraine since then-President Donald Trump fired Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch in 2019. The vacancy had become a diplomatic black spot as the Ukraine war erupted into the top global crisis. Brink, who has deep experience in Eastern Europe, will face another Senate vote to be confirmed for the post in Ukraine. Blinken also informed Zelensky that U.S. diplomats will return to Ukraine this week for the first time since the U.S. evacuated its remaining diplomats in the country. The decision signals newfound U.S. confidence that Kiev is now at least moderately safe after Russia withdrew its troops from the city earlier this month following its failed attempt to capture the capital city. Blinken also said the U.S. will provide another $713 million in military financing for Ukraine and other regional partners, including assistance for Ukraine to transform from old Soviet-era weapons to more modern systems used by NATO members. Getting U.S. weapons systems like heavy artillery into Ukraine has been a major logistical challenge, with Washington aware of the risk that Russia could target weapons supply lines into the country. In recent days, Zelensky has said he both expects and hopes that Biden will personally visit, although he acknowledged that it might not be possible until the security situation improves. Biden, who traveled to Ukraine multiple times as senator and vice president, has told reporters he wants to go back as soon as possible. Credit unions in Oregon are raising funds for people suffering in Ukraine. 15 institutions have already raised over $65,000 for Oregon-based Mercy Corps and the Worldwide Foundation for Credit Unions. KBOO's Nathaniel Kapp has more.
Ukrainians continue to suffer in their country from the Russian invasion, and in Oregon, credit unions have banded together to send aid to the people there. Aaron Goff is president and CEO at the Clackamas Federal Credit Union. He says he and the heads of other credit unions were inspired after hearing from the Ukrainian ambassador.
It didn't take long at all for people to jump on board and say, yeah, we'd like to donate and contribute to that. And then along the way, we found a few credit unions who had personal connections there, employees that were Ukrainian or that had Ukrainian spouses or family. And of course, they were very motivated to be involved.
15 Oregon credit unions have raised $77,000 for the relief effort. Part of it is going to the Oregon-based organization Mercy Corps, which is providing on-the-ground humanitarian aid in the region. Relief is also going to the Worldwide Foundation for Credit Unions Ukrainian Credit Union Displacement Fund, providing support to mitigate the effects on Ukraine's credit union system. Goth says credit unions are charitable, but it isn't every day they come together to aid people halfway around the world.
It's just such a horrific atrocity that's happening over there that we just felt compelled. We felt like we had to do something. I mean, I wish we could do more. I wish there were more funds available, but just very motivated.
Last week, the United States approved an additional $800 million in aid to Ukraine, bringing the total since the February invasion to $2.5 billion. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Nathaniel Kapp.
The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments Monday about a former high school football coach from Washington State who wanted to kneel and pray on the field after games. The justices have to determine how to balance the religious and free speech rights of teachers and coaches with the rights of students not to feel pressured into participating. KBOO's Josh Salem has the story.
The United States Supreme Court is hearing a case involving public school officials and a former Washington State high school football coach who wanted to kneel and pray on the field after games. Kennedy versus Bremerton School District involves Joseph Kennedy, a coach who would kneel at the center of the field following games and lead students in prayer. The Bremerton, Washington School District asked him to stop. Kennedy's lawyers say the Constitution's freedom of speech and freedom of religion guarantees allow him to pray on the field, with students free to join. However, the school district says Kennedy's religious speech interfered with students' own religious freedom rights and could have the effect of pressuring students to pray. They say his behavior also opened the district to lawsuits. The school district says it tried to work out a solution allowing Kennedy, who is Christian, to pray privately before or after the game, even on field, after the students left. But that offer did not prevent the lawsuit. The court has been sympathetic to the concerns of religious individuals and groups recently. It unanimously sided with a Catholic foster care agency that did not want to work with same-sex couples. And in an 8-1 supermajority, the court ruled in favor of a Texas death row inmate who wanted to have his pastor pray out loud and touch him while the execution was carried out. The case from Bremerton is not new. In 2019, the court justices declined to get involved in an earlier stage. However, several justices became critical of an appeals court ruling for the school district. They wrote the court's, quote, understanding of the free speech rights of public school teachers is troubling, end quote. Kennedy started working at Bremerton High School in 2008. He initially prayed alone on the 50-yard line at the end of games, but students started joining him. Over time, he began to deliver a short, inspirational talk with religious references. Kennedy says he never required players to join or asked any student to pray, but he did lead the team in prayer in the locker room before games. The school district didn't learn of Kennedy's practice until 2015. It told him then that he needed to stop praying with students or engaging in overtly religious activity while acting as a coach. After Kennedy continued to pray in the field, he was placed on paid leave. His contract expired, and he did not reapply. Kennedy said he wanted to give thanks for what his players had accomplished and for their safety. The justices clearly wrestled with how to balance the religious and free speech rights of teachers and coaches with the rights of students not to feel pressured into participating. At one point during arguments, Justice Stephen Breyer said, quote, this doesn't seem like a new problem, end quote. A decision is expected before the court begins its summer recess. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
You're listening to a spring membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in depth. Then at 6, it's Labor Radio, and at 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 45 degrees. Tomorrow will be rainy with a high of 54. Today in history, in 2014, officials from Flint, Michigan switched the city's water supply to the Flint River as a cost-cutting measure for the struggling city. In doing so, they unwittingly introduced lead-poisoned water into homes in what would become a massive public health crisis. The city's recovery has been slow as it works to replace 30,000 lead pipes. In 2017, reports showed that the water in most homes was generally safe, but many residents still don't trust what comes out of their tap. The quote of the day is from American poet, memoirist, and civil rights activist Maya Angelou, who said, quote, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. Emmanuel Macron wins re-election in France. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene denies charges of insurrection, and new details emerge on a top Republican's effort to encourage former President Donald Trump to resign. With more on these stories, it's Jonah Chester with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times. Incumbent French President Emmanuel Macron won re-election over conservative challenger Marine Le Pen. This was Le Pen's third bid for the presidency, having lost in 2012 and 2017. Polls put Macron ahead by about 15%, which would make him the first French president in 20 years to win a second term. But the New York Times puts voter turnout at close to 60%, the lowest in two decades. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Georgia Republican, was in court Friday fending off charges of insurrection.
I was asking people to come for a peaceful march, which is what everyone is entitled to do under their First Amendment, but I was not asking them to actively engage in violence or any type of action.
Citing her inflammatory social media messages, a coalition of her constituents argue Greene violated the Constitution by collaborating with insurrectionists on January 6th. A guilty verdict could bar her from holding office. Greene says she still believes the big lie that widespread voter fraud cost Donald Trump the 2020 election. In related news, leaked audio reveals House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy planned to encourage the former president to resign following the insurrection. In a recorded call obtained by the New York Times, McCarthy tells his fellow Republicans that Trump, quote, bears responsibilities for his words and actions, no ifs, ands, or buts, unquote, and that the president had acknowledged some responsibility for the attack. McCarthy has been publicly loyal to Trump, and the former president says his relationship with the minority leader is still positive in spite of the leak. But the revelation could make it difficult for McCarthy to become speaker if Republicans win the most seats this fall. Florida's Republican lawmakers are facing a gerrymandering lawsuit over the state's new congressional voting maps. Politico reports a coalition of voting rights, civil rights, and Democrat-aligned redistricting groups filed the suit Friday, the same day Governor Ron DeSantis signed the new maps into law. President Joe Biden Friday signed an executive order which seeks to better protect the nation's forests, especially old growth. Biden pointed to reforestation as a way to fight climate change.
If you compare the map of North America in 1620 with America today, you'll see how much we've devastated our forest.
The executive order comes as some environmental groups are criticizing his opening up public lands to new oil and gas drilling. Former Utah Senator Orrin Hatch passed away Saturday at the age of 88. The longest-serving Republican in the chamber's history sponsored thousands of bills during more than four decades on Capitol Hill. In an interview when he retired, Hatch stressed bipartisan cooperation, pointing to his long legislative partnership with Democrat Ted Kennedy.
Frankly, I believe this is the most important government in the world, the most important country in the world.
I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A review of more than 2,200 place names in the U.S. National Park System shows many may reflect colonialism, oppression, or white supremacy. With more on that story and others, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An extensive review of more than 2,200 place names in the U.S. National Park System show many may reflect colonialism, oppression, or white supremacy. KLCC's Brian Bull has more.
Nashe Bairn is an associate professor of ethnic studies and Native American studies at Oregon State University. He says locally, sites across Crater Lake National Park were included for analysis.
We did see that there was one called Devil's Backbone, and we weren't clear on the origin. So while we did the research on these, we don't always come to the conclusions, right? We're not always able to say for sure what the intent is. But a lot of times the word devil gets attached to indigenous peoples, communities, or cultures in this sort of Christian and non-Christian binary.
Barnes says he'd like people to use this research to understand how place names came to be and to help develop alternatives that don't celebrate the removal or destruction of Native communities. He says beyond parks, other sites, including buildings, can be reevaluated. The research, titled Words Are Monuments, is in the latest edition of the journal People and Nature. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
A bill to ensure Native Americans are included in the renaming of the University of California Hastings College of Law is set for a committee hearing in the California State Assembly on Tuesday. The college is named for a land speculator who built his fortune committing atrocities against Northern California tribes. Yuki people would like to see the college take a name in their language. During a hearing on the college in March, tribal representatives recounted the massacre of indigenous people by Serenus Hastings. They say the name change by Native people would be part of the healing process. The measure, introduced by Native American state lawmaker James Ramos, was amended to include a provision requiring consultation and collaboration with the school and tribal representatives. The California legislature named the school in state statute in 1878 because of the legislative action. A state statute is now required to rename the campus. In 2021, the college board approved changing the school's name and has been in discussion with tribes. For the first time in 2 years, the Miss Haskell pageant was held in person at Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. As Rhonda Lavaldo reports, it was a time of celebration for the tribal college, and now the royalty will represent the school.
Due to the pandemic, the royalty pageant for Haskell Indian Nations University was not held, and the student ambassadors continued their roles for 2 years. Finally able to start again, Haskell Brave Alexander Manygoats Dene said he was glad to see all the support for the ladies competing for Miss Haskell.
It's pretty amazing, and it's beautiful because, it's, especially during the pandemic, you know, I feel like that really changed a lot of people's mindset, people's passion of going to Haskell, even coming here. I'm glad that a lot of people showed up and showed their support for the university and for how much they care about this pageant.
While there was no entries for Haskell Brave, there was 5 ladies in the running for the coveted title. Winning was Asia Benelli Dene, whose platform for the next year will be mental health for students.
My platform was based on the importance and awareness of mental health, because mental health affects almost every aspect of our life, the way we interact with each other, the way we make decisions. And so I wanted to bring more awareness and more resources to students to help with that mental awareness. And I wanted to also help students to help with that transition from being young adult into fully fledged adult.
Benelli is also a member of the Haskell volleyball and track and field team. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A nonprofit in Chicago is transforming an old library into a climate-friendly headquarters. Latinos Progresando sees the renovation as a chance to make a positive impact in the Little Village neighborhood. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. An old building in Chicago is being gutted and rehabbed to run entirely on electricity, not natural gas. The building is a former library on a street corner in Little Village, a largely Hispanic neighborhood.
Having a building that is energy efficient and looks beautiful is not just for downtown, and it's not just for wealthier neighborhoods. It could be right here where we live and work too.
That's Adrian Lang of Latinos Progresando, the community-based nonprofit that owns the building and will use it for its headquarters. When her group acquired the building from the city, the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems all needed to be replaced. Rather than install new gas lines, the group opted to install a fully electric heat pump system.
We were surprised to learn that the savings from not installing the gas lines nearly offset the cost of installing a fully electric system.
Because the system is electric, it can be powered by clean energy as more renewables are added to the grid. Cutting carbon pollution from buildings helps reduce global warming and improve air quality.
And so we saw our project as a way to make a positive impact, not just with the programming that'll happen inside the building, but with the building itself.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 25th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Nathaniel Kapp and Josh Salem. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Jonah Chester, Antonio Gonzalez, Emily Scott, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, it's Alternative Radio, featuring lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Times Like Now with host Trevor Collins. Then at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Host Joseph Galavan interviews Elle Miller about Portland exhibit Banksyland, a show featuring the work of British street artist Banksy. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. Thank you. KBOO is in our spring membership hive drive right now, so now is a great time to support your local community radio station. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. As some commentators